Happy Friday, everyone. I hope you're looking forward to a great weekend with your home congregation. And if you don't have one, why not? Go out there, do your research, find a place, get plugged in, stay plugged in. Everyone needs a home church, and every home church needs more people. If you're looking right now for a place to call home and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East Building, please come on over, check us out, and make sure you introduce yourself to me as one of my Radio Bible students. We are going to return to Leviticus, the rule book for Levites, chapter 22, verse 26 today. We're kind of in a repetitive area on a few ideas here in the book. You remember that we had a summary we did from chapters 1 through 7 of the book of Leviticus about sacrifices and how they have to be a certain standard. And that standard, for all practical purposes, is perfect. No defects, no problems. And that's because they are to be given to God. And God deserves the best, not the junk, not the leftovers, not the deformed or the defective. And so we've seen a lot of that recently. And so now we have a reminder that God also deserves the firstborn animals because of the Exodus, when God redeemed the firstborn of Israel with the blood of the Lamb. All firstborn humans and animals belong to God. Now, the humans, they continue to serve God. The animals serve God in a different way. Some of them get sacrificed. Others of them end up being put into service by the priests. And so let's talk about some of that, starting in Leviticus 22, 26. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, when an ox or sheep or goat is born, it shall remain 7 days with its mother, and from the eighth day on, it shall become acceptable as a food offering to he who is. Now, this is a parallel to the idea of circumcision. Every baby boy born into the Jewish community has to be circumcised and named on day number 8. And so here are the animals being born. And they become, if they're a sacrificial grade animal, they become eligible for use as a sacrifice on day number 8. Verse number 28. But you shall not kill an ox or a sheep and her young in one day. Now, I parallel this with the commandment that you shall not boil or cook a young goat in its mother's milk. It's just plain mean. It's unfeeling. It is cruel. It is hard-hearted. And so the same thing applies with the idea you don't kill mama and baby on the same day. It's just not right. Verse 29. And when you sacrifice a sacrifice of thanksgiving to he who is, you shall sacrifice it so that you may be accepted. So you've got to follow proper kosher kill requirements. The animal has to be perfect. And verse 30, if the sacrifice includes edible portions, which not all of them do, but some of them do, it shall be eaten on the same day. You shall leave none of it until morning. I am he who is. Now, there's a fine-tuning of that in another passage that we already looked at. You can go ahead and eat a little bit of it on the second day after its sacrifice. Keep in mind that the day begins at sunset. But you can't keep anything for eating beyond that second day. Verse 31. You shall keep my commandments and do them. I am he who is. And you shall not profane my holy name, that I may be sanctified among the people of Israel. Remember, sanctified is the idea of being regarded as holy, as worthy of respect. And so God is always to be treated with respect. And his name needs to be treated with respect in the way that we act. And so here the Israelis were expected to do that in all of their sacrificial ideas and in their priesthood ideas, in their day-to-day living ideas. I am he who is, who sanctifies you, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am he who is. And so God does bring this up repeatedly, who he is, what he's done for them. That is why he's calling them to account. They have to live a certain way because they're connected to him. Chapter 23, we're going to have a review of the calendar and talk about the mandatory holy days, the festivals, the observations that must happen during each year of the Jewish calendar. So chapter 23, he who is spoke to Moses saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, these are the appointed feasts of he who is that you shall proclaim as holy convocations, a fancy word for get together, an assembly. They are my appointed feasts. Verse 3. And by the way, before I go any farther, the word feast here, not really focused on the food. It's more focused on the appointed get-together time. Verse number 3. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Shabbat, a Sabbath of solemn rest. A holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is a Sabbath to he who is in all your dwelling places. Now, we've hit on this several times already. This is something specifically given to the Israeli people after they'd spent several generations working 7 days a week and all year round. No time off, no days off. No holidays, no vacations. They were slaves. And so God tells the Israelis, starting now, you are going to have a protected national day of rest. You'll work 6 days. On day number 6, I'm going to give you a double portion of manna. Go ahead and prepare food both for your sixth day and your seventh day because everybody gets to rest on day number 7. It's time off and it's protected. And so this is very Jewish. It is not binding in the New Testament. We know that for a couple of different places that is commented on. But probably one of the most powerful ones is in Acts chapter 15, the whole Judaizer heresy results in the apostles and elders communicating the will of the Holy Spirit to the church, saying that no, Gentiles cannot be forced to become Jewish in order to be saved. The only thing that we Jewish people are doing that the Gentiles who are becoming followers of Jesus need to also do are things that were already universal, such as you don't cheat on your spouse, you don't party around with pagans, you know, and have fellowship dinners at their temples and stuff like that, and you don't eat arterial blood. Nothing about the Sabbath, nothing about kosher eating, nothing about what you wear, nothing like that. So it's pretty clear that the Sabbath day is not binding on Gentile believers in Jesus. Now, when we talk about the Sabbath day, we're talking about from sunset on Friday night till sunset on Saturday night. That's the Sabbath day for the Jewish people. But that doesn't change the principle. And I've stressed this almost every single time I bring it up. Everybody needs a day off. Everybody needs to have some time where they're not doing physical labor, where they're not doing the thing that they do in order to get a paycheck. Now, that's harder for a few of us because a lot of what I do as a preacher, I do with my brain. And it's hard to tell your brain to shut down. And so it's a little bit tougher for those of us that have mental jobs. But the concept is everybody needs to rest. Now, some people in the Jewish community had to work on the Sabbath day. Priests had to work on the Sabbath day. Levites often had to work on the Sabbath day. And so what did they do? More than likely, they got a comp day. More than likely, they got an alternate day of rest that they were given to, rest, recuperate. Then the other thing about the Sabbath day was it was a day of, holy convocation, getting together. It was a worship day. And so we also need one day a week, at least, where we can kind of get together with all other believers and think about God and what He's done. For the Jewish people, it was synagogue service on Sabbath. For those of us that are New Testament believers, it tends to be the Lord's Day church get together. And so I hope that every last one of you is making the most of those worship opportunities. Back to the text. Remember, we're still talking about the calendar here. Verse number 4. So we've got the weekly part of the calendar. 6 days a week you work, seventh day you take off. Verse number 4. These are the appointed feasts of He who is the holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at the time appointed for them. In the first month, so this is the first month of the Jewish year, their year is based on lunar months. The first visible crescent of the setting moon that occurs in conjunction with, close connection with, the spring equinox. So we're talking about in the third week of March for our calendar. So somewhere right around there is when the equinox occurs. The first visible crescent of the new moon setting behind that sun, that becomes day number 1 of the first month of the Jewish year. Remember, their days start at sunset. And they would know because they lived with this system, they would know which day was going to be popping up. And then the months would either be 29 days long or 30 days long. So on the 14th day of that first month, at twilight, is He who is His Passover. Now the word twilight is actually the Hebrew phrase between the evenings. And when we first begin the story of the Israelis, it means that somewhere between sunset that starts the 14th and sunset that begins the 15th, the Jewish people were expected to butcher the Passover lamb. Now, that Passover lamb was picked, according to regulation, on the 10th day of the month, and it has lived in their houses for those last 4 days. But now it comes time for it to be killed. Now, there is great prophetic significance here. Jesus is the ultimate Passover lamb. He came into the city of Jerusalem on the 10th day of the first month when he was riding on that donkey and being proclaimed as the one who's coming in the name of the Lord and the one who is the lamb. On the 14th day of that same month, he died for our sins as the Passover lamb. So this is the calendar requirement. It was important because it was setting up the story of salvation. Now, verse 6, on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to he who is. For 7 days you shall not eat unleavened bread. Now, this is, again, tied in with their Exodus. They butchered and started cooking their Passover lamb on the 14th. When the sun went down on the 15th, they were not allowed to have anything leavened on the table. And at midnight or in the middle of the night, that's when they left Egypt, on the 15th. And for the next 7 days, from the 15th through the 21st, they were traveling quickly from place to place until they finally, I think, crossed the Red Sea and God drowned the Egyptian pursuit force. And I think that all probably happened on the 21st. And then they could go back to taking their time and letting their bread rise. So the 7 days of unleavened bread are a remembrance of that departure from Egypt. Verse 7, on the first day, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. So they take the day off. It's like a Sabbath day in that sense. They don't work. But you shall present a food offering to he who is for 7 days. And on the seventh day is a holy convocation. You shall do no ordinary work. So basically, every first month of the year, the Jewish people got the 15th and the 21st off. Didn't matter what day of the week it fell on. They were both holidays, work holidays. Verse number 9. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land that I give you and reap its harvest, you shall bring the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest, and he shall wave the sheaf before he who is, so that you may be accepted. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now, this is a reference to the Sabbath day that falls during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Remember, the Feast of Unleavened Bread is the 15th through the 21st. One of the days in that framework is going to be a Sabbath day. That Sabbath day becomes the Feast of First Fruits. And what they do is they go out, the day after that, the Sunday that follows the Saturday, on that first day of the week that falls during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the priest, high priest is what's referenced here, goes out into the grain fields, and the grain that we're talking about here would be barley at this time of year, and he would cut one sheaf, one little hand bundle, of that barley grain, bring it into the tabernacle or the temple, wave it as a wave offering to the Lord to basically say, this is the beginning of the harvest. Thank you. The harvest belongs to you. Now, prophetically, it was on that day, the Feast of First Fruits, the first day of the week following the Sabbath of Feast of Unleavened Bread, that's when Jesus resurrected from the dead. And we are told by Paul that Jesus is the first fruits of those who resurrected from the dead. He is the first human being. He is God, but he's also a human being. He is the first human being to be permanently resurrected from the dead. Now, we know of other stories of people being resurrected from the dead. Jesus did it on several occasions. But all of those people died again. But Jesus is the first human to permanently resurrect. And so he fulfills the symbolism of this. Now, there's some requirements for that day of the first fruits. Verse 12, on that day when you wave the sheaf, you shall offer a male lamb, a year old without blemish, as a burnt offering to he who is. The grain offering, it's going to be 2/10 of an ephah, fine flour mixed with oil, a food offering to he who is with a pleasing aroma. The drink offering with it shall be of wine, 1/4 of a hin. And you shall eat neither bread nor grain parched or fresh until this same day, until you've brought the offering of your God. It is a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. Now, what that means is no one gets to eat any of the barley grain, no matter how well ripened it is, until after the first fruit ceremony has taken place on the first day of the week following the Sabbath that falls during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So it's a kickoff to the agricultural harvest time of barley. And it's also the first day of a 50-day count to the next grain harvest. Verse 15, you shall count 7 full weeks from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering. You shall count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. And you can understand how that works. 7 weeks is 49 days. Move one more day to the first day of the week, and that's 50 days total. That's how Pentecost gets its name. Pente, 50, cost, count. 50-day count. Then you shall present a grain offering of the new grain to he who is. This time the grain is wheat, because it should be ripe now. You shall bring from your dwelling places 2 loaves of bread to be waved, made of 2/10 of ephah. They shall be of fine flour, and they shall be baked with leaven as first fruits to he who is. And then you've got the same sort of sacrifices with a little bit more. You shall present with this grain or this bread 7 lambs a year old without blemish, 1 bull from the herd, 2 rams. They shall be a burnt offering to he who is with their grain offerings, their drink offerings, a food pleasing or an offering with a pleasing aroma to he who is. You shall offer 1 male goat for a sin offering and 2 male lambs a year old as a sacrifice of peace offerings. Remember, these are different types of sacrifices described Leviticus 1 through 7 we've already talked about. And the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before he who is with the 2 lambs. They shall be holy to he who is for the priest, and you shall make a proclamation on the same day. You shall hold a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. So Pentecost is always a work holiday. It is a Sabbath of rest. You don't go to work on that day. It is a statute forever in all your dwelling places throughout your generations. Now, what's the significance of the holiday prophetically? Well, it's not that hard. We know that the church got birthed on Pentecost, 50 days after the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It is the beginning of the great harvest of souls to the gospel. And that harvest continues to this very day as the gospel goes all over the world into the hearts and the minds of new people. And so eventually that harvest will come to an end. We will move into the Harvest Festival, the celebration, which we'll be talking about soon. Now, one other thing that you should note, I mentioned it at the time, is that Jewish tradition is, and I think it's right on the money, Jewish tradition is that Israel heard the Ten Commandments of the covenant offered to them by God at Mount Sinai on their very first Pentecost. And so the new covenant was offered on the Pentecost immediately after Jesus died and rose again and ascended on high, just like the old covenant was offered 50 days after God brought the Israelis out of their Egyptian bondage. Now, since these first two festivals, mandatory festivals, Feast of Unleavened Bread and Feast of Pentecost, are connected to the harvest, we have this reminder. Verse 22, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge, nor shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am he who is your God. So you don't harvest every last bit of your standing grain, because some of that needs to belong to those that don't have fields or those that don't work for you. The understanding seems to be you always leave one sweep of the scythe along the sides of the field. It's also the common practice. You don't pick every single grape or gather every single olive or whatever other fruit from the trees and the vines. You only take what is currently ripe, leave everything else plus anything that's on the ground to the poor people and those that are living in your country but who are not Jewish. Well, we've run out of time again. Have a great weekend. Come back next week and we'll get back into the Word.